This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong over the past week. We usually do it Tuesdays on the show, but wasn't with you yesterday. We were traveling. So we'll do it here in just a few moments. Got plenty of both. Plus, who's on the hot seat in the NFL here the rest of the season? Because usually, almost a quarter of the league, about 20% of the coaches, you know, you have about a 20% turnover rate at the coaching position in the NFL. And when you look around the league right now, there aren't a lot of obvious candidates, which is a good thing. You don't want people to lose their jobs. But we know a handful of coaches usually do every year. And it's Matt Rhule, somebody that may not be coaching for his job this year. He's only 2 years into a pretty lengthy contract. But has the tide started to turn on the Panthers head coach? Speaking of the tide, if we have time, we'll start to look ahead to Alabama, Georgia. I think there are some interesting dynamics at play in that matchup this weekend. And we'll continue to break it down throughout the rest of the week leading up to the game this weekend, all the conference championship games. This is a great time of the year. Between the rivalry weekend to now conference, it's what I always say about college basketball as well. So much focus is on March Madness. You know, let's say that's the playoff for college football. So much focus is on the playoff. But before you get there, championship week in college basketball is great. You got more teams playing. And every game is so impactful, and you got games going on all week long and during the afternoon on Monday, Tuesday, went, you know, all week. Yeah, maybe it's like the Horizon League and the Summit League, but still, these guys are playing for, you know, for their seasons, and they're usually fun games. I love – March Madness is a blast. Don't get me wrong. It's the best playoff we have. But the about 2 weeks leading up to it, when you have all these conference tournaments, I think that's even more enjoyable in college basketball. I think it's very underrated. Similar here for college football. We focus so much on the playoff. Is this team going to make it? Is this team going to make it? And then come New Year's Day, right, you watch theoretically two great games. They usually aren't. But, you know, and all the other bowl games going on New Year's Day. But leading up to it, you get this two-week period plus. Then you throw in the recruiting, early signing day, the coaching changes now. But you get 2 weeks of great games here from the rivalries this past weekend to now conference championships this weekend. You know, this is the best time. It's also like in the NFL, we focus so much on the Super Bowl, but the better day is really conference championship. The conference championship Sunday, you get two games instead of one. And we all focus on the end game, you know, getting to the Super Bowl, getting to the college football playoff. But it's those final steps to get there. Getting to March Madness, final steps to get there that are really, to me, the more exciting part and certainly, in that sense, underrated. So we'll get ready for all those games over the next couple of days to get ready for the college football weekend. Most notably, of course, Alabama and Georgia. All right, usually Tuesday on the show, I let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. Now, if you've been hanging with us this afternoon, you know I'm on the road. I'm in Asheville with the Citadel. We're getting ready for tip-off tonight. So it may be a little more difficult from a production standpoint being, you know, in a remote studio, but we're going to get through it anyways with where I've been right, where I was wrong. I got plenty of both. So I can very, you know, I'm typically long-winded with these. I'll try to make it a little snappy because we got a lot to get through. I've been right about quite a bit and wrong about quite a bit over the past week. I usually have big opinions, you know, so I'll let you know where I've been right. I'll brag, but I'll also hold myself accountable, let you know what I've gotten wrong lately. So let's get to it. We always start with a positive. I got plenty of each. Where I've been right, where I've been wrong.
Where Luke was right.
Well, Clemson winning by double digits and covering the spread against South Carolina. I'll get to where I was wrong with this matchup, but I was right about the Clemson side of things, covering and winning by double digits. Just because Clemson was underachieving this year and South Carolina overachieved doesn't subtly put them on the same level. There's still a big gap between those two. There's still a lot of steps you have to take from overachieving to getting to where Clemson is currently. Clemson has a top five talented roster. A top five roster in terms of talent in college football based off of recruiting. South Carolina is in the 20s. That's still a sizable gap. We saw that play out Saturday. So in terms of the Palmetto Bowl, I was right about Clemson winning by double digits, but I was also wrong about something in that game too.
Luke was wrong.
And that was the South Carolina side of things. As I always say, I believe in congruent arguments. Two things can be right, you know, at once. I thought Clemson would win at double digits, a win by double digits. I also thought South Carolina would show up and give a better effort. My prediction for the game officially was 31-17. I almost nailed Clemson, right? They scored 30, so I figured, yeah, that's about expected. I thought they'd be able to run it right through South Carolina. But on the flip side, even against that Clemson defense, silly me, for thinking South Carolina could do some things offensively. Instead, that was one of the worst offensive performances you've seen from a South Carolina team, and there's been a handful of them over the years, but that one was really bad on Saturday. I was wrong. I thought South Carolina could at least score a few points. They're going to lose by double digits, but, you know, they'll hang in there for a little bit. That game, you could tell it was over very quick, a couple of possessions in. So I knew Clemson would win by double digits, but I was also wrong in that South Carolina played even worse than I expected on Saturday.
Where Luke was right.
Will Shipley. I said at the start of the year, by the end of this season, this freshman running back is going to be a star for Clemson. Will Shipley ended the regular season now by rushing for over 110 yards in three of the last four games. Over the final month of this season, he's averaging 5.5 yards per carry, five touchdowns in the four games. And he has more catches in the last four games than he did the previous eight. And as we saw Saturday, ran it right through South Carolina. The team had 265 rushing yards. He had about half of that, and if the game was closer, he would have went off for even more. Clemson has some questions, certainly at the quarterback position moving forward. I don't know if DJ is the guy of the future. He's really going to have to improve if that's the case. You're going to have other guys who will be battling for that spot, other recruits. You're going to hear about Arch Manning eventually in the next 2 years. But I think you have a star at the running back position, and we have seen that now play out here. You know, that running back position was a little more crowded, that running back room. Some guys transferred out. Shipley even said there was some bad attitude, some jealousy. They have a better, you know, dynamic now, a better feeling in that room, less bodies, and Shipley has taken over here to end this season as just a freshman. I think you have a real star at that position. Now you just have to figure out the quarterback spot if you're Clemson.
Where Luke was wrong.
Major League Baseball and the contracts we've seen. So it looks like we're heading towards a lockout in the next 10 hours. Officially at midnight tonight. I don't think there'll be a new CBA agreed upon in the next 10 hours, so we're heading towards a lockout. Here's where I'm wrong. I thought that for Major League Baseball, I thought guys would wait. I thought this would be a very quiet offseason up until this point because players would want to see what the new CBA would look like. You know, I know if I'm making a decision, I would like all the information first. If some sort of change is coming, I want to know that change before I agree to something. For example, if I could try to come up with the best analogy, I guess it'd be like if you're buying a home in the area, but your company's going through some sort of ownership change or they're bringing a new boss. And before you purchase that home, maybe you want to wait until the new boss comes in to say either A, if you like him, B, if he likes you. Like, are they going to get rid of me? Maybe before I settle down and commit to some sort of house in the area, right, let me make sure that I'm going to be staying here with this job or maybe I have to relocate or who knows what happens. I want all the answers before I make a decision. So if I was a baseball player, before I agree to a contract, I want to see, like, well, what is the CBA going to bring? That was my thought process. Instead, a lot of these players have done the opposite. They thought, let me get out in front of this because things may get worse after the CBA, the new CBA, or some sort of lockout now. Let me get this contract on the books. So we're seeing a bunch of deals, kind of like a photo finish here, trying to finish before this deadline. A lot of contracts in the last 72 hours. This has been the busiest early offseason we've had for baseball. Usually we don't get these type of deals of money being thrown around Thanksgiving week or weekend leading into December. Usually, you know, it takes a little bit longer, at least till the winter meetings, which usually comes up mid-December. But this year, guys are trying to get those contracts before we enter a lockout, and then who knows what's going to happen. So I was wrong. I thought players were going to wait. Instead, they've done the opposite. They said, no, let's get these deals done before a lockout so that we know we got this taken care of regardless of whatever may come from the new CBA.
Where Luke was right.
Well, I said during the summer, we've been asking for parity in college football. I have specifically. And I said this year, we could finally get that year for parity. I didn't know if it would happen for sure, but I thought if there was ever a season, it would be this year. And boy, have we gotten that parity. In the ACC, the last six conference championships have been won by Clemson until this year. In the Big 12, last six conference championships won by Oklahoma until this year. In the Big 10, five of the last seven conference championships have been won by Ohio State. They won't be involved this year. In the SEC, 5 of the last 7 have been won by Alabama. They are involved in the SEC title game this year, so they can continue that trend. However, they are a touchdown underdog. It's the second largest underdog they've been since Nick Saban has been hired there. So there is a chance. You're telling me there's a chance, but they're not expected to win the SEC. We're going to get a lot of new conference champions. Additionally, if Alabama doesn't win that game, you look at a playoff field that potentially could include 4 teams who have a combined 1 playoff victory since we've gone to the playoff format. You would have a Georgia, who has not won the national championship since 1980. Michigan, it's been since 1997. Potentially Oklahoma State, 1945. And Cincinnati's never even been a top 5 team. They could potentially be in the playoff for the first time. We have not seen parity like this. People will compare this year to 2007. When it comes to the actual champions, I think this year is even more crazy from a parity standpoint. I don't think we've seen parity like this in a long time. I thought if there's ever a year to get it, it would be this year. And boy, have we gotten it. And I'll tell you, at least for me personally, I love it. I think college football, I think it's been a great year this year because of all this chaos, new blood, some surprises. You don't know what to expect. I think it's been good for the sport, and I'm glad it played out as I thought it may have going back to the summer.
Where Luke was right.
David Cutcliffe, I take no joy in predicting people losing their jobs or coaches losing their jobs. But it is kind of part of the job. And going back to our preseason predictions, I said for Duke, when we got to Duke, I said David Cutcliffe, this will be his last year. It was announced over the weekend, him and Duke, I think they worded it as mutually parting ways. But we know, right? If it was up to Cutcliffe, he would still be there. Duke's moving on. Problem for him at Duke was he was not able to replace Daniel Jones. Now, look, there's a lot of problems. Duke is not an easy job to win at for college football. But when you get a quarterback like Daniel Jones, he's the best quarterback Duke has had in a long time, maybe ever. Right? I mean, he was a top 10 draft pick. How often have they put a quarterback in the top 10 of the NFL draft? I don't think they ever had before Daniel Jones. Since Jones left, it's hard to replace that type of talent at Duke. They usually don't get those types of players. And they're 4-22 in the ACC since Jones went to the NFL. 4-22. Cutcliffe has been there for about 15 years. It's kind of run its course. Program's moving in the wrong direction. You're never going to win national championships at Duke. But 4-22 also isn't good enough in the conference. You'd like to be more competitive than that. Plus, he's getting up there in years. He's been there a long time. It's time for a change. And at the start of the year, I said, this is going to be it for Cutcliffe at Duke. And sure enough, at the end of the year, it is it for Cutcliffe. He's had a great career. We'll see if he winds up somewhere else. He's great at developing quarterbacks, good offensive mind. But for Duke, it is time to try to go in a different direction.
Where Luke was wrong.
That Notre Dame is a state job. It was just Monday. I mean, I couldn't have teed it up any better. We were talking about it on the show Monday, and I gave you my list, as I did earlier this afternoon. I updated it for this afternoon, but I gave you my list of jobs in college football that are final stop jobs that you get there and you don't want to leave. And I said Notre Dame on the show on Monday because my thought process was Brian Kelly has had plenty of opportunities to leave. He hasn't. He's now 60. I figure once you get to 60, you've been there 12 years, you're settled in. We hadn't heard Brian Kelly's name mentioned for any of these jobs. I didn't think he was going anywhere. So I figure he must be satisfied. He must be like these coaches like a Paterno and Bobby Bowden and a Bo Schembechler and these guys over the years that got to a job and they were good. They never wanted to leave. It was a good job. They were satisfied. They were happy there. Saban right now at Alabama. Dabo at Clemson. We'll see if he ever leaves. Right? You're good there. You're winning. You're fine. You're having a lot of success. They're going to build a statue. You don't need to go anywhere. I was talking about that Monday on the show. And sure enough, right, like a kiss of death here, I jinxed it. Sorry, Notre Dame fans. About 6 hours later, we get the announcement that Brian Kelly's leaving for LSU. You couldn't draw it up any better. So I was dead wrong. I thought Notre Dame was one of those jobs. Clearly it's not. There's very few of those jobs left, if any, really, at this point in college football. But I thought Notre Dame was a stay job where you would get there and not look to leave. And for the first time since 1907, that has changed. Brian Kelly becomes the first coach in over 100 years to leave Notre Dame for another college football job. No longer is Notre Dame a stay job like I thought just 48 hours ago.
Where Luke was wrong.
No way would the Steelers get swept by the Bengals. That's what I said Friday. That was one of my picks I gave you on the show Friday. I said, nope, not happening. They lost earlier this year to the Bengals. Mike Tomlin does his best work as an underdog. He does really well coming off a loss. They usually don't lose very often, you know, losing streaks. And they don't lose to the Bengals. They don't get swept by the Bengals. Well, sure enough, the Steelers went out there. They were horrendous. Ben Roethlisberger threw an interception on the first possession. He threw a pick six in the second quarter. This game was done with very quickly. It was over by the end of the first quarter. And I bet on the Steelers in my own personal life, and boy, was that brutal to swallow, that you, when you know you lost before the end of the first quarter, that's a terrible feeling, right? Usually you want to at least sweat it out to the fourth. I knew minutes in, like, oh, no, that was a bad play. I just wasted money. The Bengals sweep the Steelers for the first time since 2009. They outscored them in the two wins 65-20, dominated them. And after the game, I love the quote from Joe Burrow. Somebody asked him, you know, like, did you ever think you would be able to sweep the Steelers? And he said, well, we have bigger goals than that. Who can- we swept the Steelers. That's nothing. We haven't accomplished anything. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that was the message. Like, oh, big whoop. We swept the Steelers. Okay, they're a 500 team. We want to go win some playoff games this year. I love that thought process from Joe Burrow afterwards. The Bengals, clearly a better team than the Steelers this year. Blew them out both times, and I did not think they would finish off the sweep. Well, they sure did on Sunday. I got that pick wrong.
Where Luke was right.
I may have been wrong that Notre Dame's not a stay job, but I was right that USC is a top job. I gave you my list going back just a week ago. And I said, if all things were equal, if you're, let's just say, Urban Meyer, because everyone always mentions his name, and you could pick any of these open college jobs, which one would you pick? Now, for Urban, we know now that Notre Dame's open, he's got a connection there. But at the time, Notre Dame was not open. And of the jobs available for any coach, for just a nameless coach that could get any job they want, I said, I put USC number one ahead of LSU. And Lincoln Riley agrees with me. He turned down LSU to go to USC. I said all season, since they fired Clay Helton, that I think USC is one of the top jobs in all of college football still today, and in particular, better than LSU. And Lincoln Riley, again, agreed. You don't have to leave to recruit. You have an easier path to the playoff. You have the history and tradition that USC brings that very few schools, if any, could match. I mean, maybe in Alabama, maybe in Ohio State, that's about it. But USC still is towards the tops. They've had more NFL players than any other school up until last year. They were finally passed last year, right? They're up there in national championships, conference championships, this and that. Every category, they're towards the top. It's still a premier job. They've just been waiting for the right guy to get them back to that level, and I think that's Lincoln Riley. But a lot of people put them down, forget about them because of the recent years or because, ah, it's the Pac-12. That's a gold mine out there waiting for somebody to come along and get them back to where they were 15 years ago. I think Lincoln Riley's going to do it. And so Lincoln agreed with me. He saw what I was seeing. USC is still a top, I put it, I think top three in all of college football, I said, at the time when Clay Helton was fired. And certainly of the jobs that were open, I put it number one, better than LSU. And Lincoln Riley, at least he's one person that agrees with me as he turned down LSU for that USC job.
Where Luke was wrong.
Penn State. Just like the Steelers, I told you to take Penn State. Something about that state really did me in this weekend. I said, Penn State, they're going to beat Michigan State this weekend. No, I was wrong. And for Penn State, a real indictment, they lost all three games. I talked about this on the show Monday. For James Franklin, you can't get swept in the three most important games on your schedule. Michigan, Ohio State, and then Michigan State on Saturday, and they lost as a favorite against Michigan State. And now James Franklin, he's been swept by those three in 4 out of 8 years at Penn State. That's not good enough. I thought Penn State would get the win against Michigan State on Saturday. Instead, it puts an end to another disappointing season. They're 500 over the last 2 years. Can't beat those teams. You got to start beating those teams first. You know, you got to crawl before you can walk. You got to beat those teams first before you start talking about winning the Big Ten. That's where Franklin needs to begin. Do a better job against those three teams in your conference.
Where Luke was right.
Christian McCaffrey, or you could say just paying top running backs. At the time, I said instead of paying Christian McCaffrey, I would trade him. Trade him while you can, before it's too late, before you lose that value. Don't give him a big deal. Don't give any running back a second contract. It has worked. There's about two examples of this ever working out in the history of the NFL. Stop giving running backs big second-time contracts. Let's look at the seven highest-paid running backs in the NFL right now. Christian McCaffrey, out for the year. Derrick Henry, out for probably the rest of at least the regular season. Dalvin Cook, out 3 to 6 weeks. Alvin Kamara, injured. May return this week, but he's been out a few weeks. Zeke Elliott, banged up. May miss some time. Hasn't been great lately. Aaron Jones, just got back from injury. Nick Chubb, just got back from injury. Long story short, seven highest paid running backs have all missed multiple games this year. They've all been injured. And which one of them have really been great? Derrick Henry's been good when healthy. Christian McCaffrey was not playing well this year regardless. Dalvin Cook, having a bit of a down year. Alvin Kamara, not having a great year. Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard's been better. Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon's been just as good. Nick Chubb, he's been good when he's been healthy, but you know, he hasn't been healthy all year. And then you also have Saquon Barkley, who hasn't gotten that contract yet, but they picked him top five in the draft. He's been horrendous. He can't stay on the field. Stop pouring resources into running backs. You can get one undrafted. You can get one from the waiver wire. You can get one from their couch, and they'll be a top running back for you. Stop devoting high draft picks or big-time money to running backs. It never works out, and unfortunately, Panther fans, Christian McCaffrey is the latest example. He has missed, I believe it is now going to be, by the end of this season, I think he's only played in 10 of what would be 33 games the last 2 years, if I have that correct off the top of my head, after you gave him this big contract. It's not worth it. Stop paying running backs, and McCaffrey is just the latest example.
Where Luke was wrong.
I thought Alabama would dominate in the Iron Bowl. I said, take them, favored by 20. They're going to come out, they're going to send the message. Instead, it took four overtimes and quite the choke job by Auburn. It cost Mike Bobo his job. Tank Bigsby goes out of bounds for whatever reason. Alabama comes back in the fourth quarter, forces overtime, they win. This is not the same Alabama team. And once we get to our Alabama-Georgia preview, I'm going to spend more time on this. But Nick Saban, I thought his interview after the game was very telling, that he's letting you know what he thinks about this team. It's not the same Alabama team that we have been used to over the years. In fact, they have four wins now this year by a touchdown or less. That's more wins by one possession than they've had in the previous 6 years combined. They're playing more close games this year than they have the last 6 years combined. This is not the same Alabama team, and I'm finally coming around to that. I thought, okay, against Auburn, they're going to come out and blow them out. They couldn't even do that against a 500 Auburn team. Now, they're a 7-point underdog to Georgia on Saturday, and I think I may like Georgia to cover the spread. This is not the same Nick Saban team that we're used to. I was wrong to think Alabama would come out and put their foot down against Auburn. They just, I guess, don't have the ability to do that right now.
Where Luke was right.
Did not like the move Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC. I said it's not worth it. It's not a win for anybody. You don't win from this. Only financially do you win. Same with the rest of the SEC teams. But for Oklahoma and Texas, it's going to be tougher for you to win. And for the other teams in the SEC, it's only going to be tougher for them to win. I did not see the big benefit in this other than, yeah, of course, dollar signs. And we know money makes the world go round. Everybody makes decisions because of money. So, okay, fine. But from a winning football perspective, this is not a good move. It's the kiss of death here. And you lost Lincoln Riley because of it. He bailed. Dan Wetzel alluded to this earlier when he joined us. I believe if Oklahoma was still in the Big 12, if they were planning on staying in the Big 12, I think Lincoln Riley stays there. He wouldn't have a reason to leave. But now you give him a reason to leave. And you go from what was the easiest path to make the playoff to now the toughest by entering the SEC. So what did Lincoln Riley do? He went from the toughest path, trying to compete as Oklahoma in the SEC, to now the new easiest path. It's no longer going to be the Big 12. They don't have that top team like an Oklahoma anymore. It's now going to be USC at the Pac-12 because the rest of that conference is lousy. That's the new easiest path right there with Clemson. Clemson and USC will have the easiest path to the playoff now. As we always say around here, work smarter, not harder. That's what Lincoln Riley chose to do, and really because Oklahoma said, hey, we're going to go to the SEC. So I hope it's worth it. It costs you a really good coach. We'll see who they can get to replace him, but things are going to get more difficult now for them and Texas by joining the SEC.
Where Luke was wrong.
Sticking with Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. I liked Oklahoma State in this game on Saturday in Bedlam, but I said on Friday, I didn't include it in one of my picks because I couldn't trust them. I said, they always find ways to lose this game. Well, this year, credit them, they found ways to win it. They shut out Oklahoma in the second half. They erased a two-score deficit in the second half. They got the turnover they needed. They came back. They won. And for Mike Gundy, just his third win in 17 years against Oklahoma. Historically, even before Gundy, Oklahoma State always found ways to lose. This time they found a way to win. And I point back to Georgia. If you have to wait to see something for the first time, you're never going to see it coming when it happens that first time. Right? And so I couldn't trust Oklahoma State because I kind of had to see it first. Well, sure enough, they went out there and proved me wrong on Saturday. It may be the same thing for Georgia this year. We're waiting for them to prove us wrong. They may do it in the national championship. You won't see it coming because you're going to be waiting around to see it first before you can believe in it. Oklahoma State, I was wrong to doubt them. I thought they'd find a way to lose. They actually found a way to win this year.
Where Luke was right.
Harbaugh. I'm going to take a victory lap on Harbaugh. I kind of got off the Harbaugh island earlier this year, but I've always defended him. I've always said, Michigan, your expectations are too high. Harbaugh's done a great job there. He's a good coach. He's won everywhere he's been. Sure enough, you take some of his money away, he puts together the best season he's had at Michigan and their best season in 25 years. And he goes out there and he finally beats Ohio State, and he does it in commanding fashion. They bullied them. and now they're a win away from the playoff. Harbaugh can coach. He is a good coach. He'll win wherever he goes. No, he hasn't met the Michigan standards, which are a little ridiculous to begin with, but he's a darn good coach, and he's in the Big Ten championship. Michigan could win the Big Ten for the first time in now what would be 17 years and go to the playoff for the first time. And because Harbaugh does know what he's doing, he's a good coach.
Where Luke was wrong.
Sleeper teams. This was kind of a kiss of death. I said Virginia Tech in the ACC, well, they fired their coach. I said TCU in the Big 12, well, they fired their coach. I said Texas Tech would be the team that would benefit from being patient with their head coach. Well, they weren't patient anymore. They fired Matt Wells. I said Cal in the Pac-12 was my sleeper. They went 3-5 in the Pac-12. I did get Kentucky. I said Kentucky would be a sleeper. They had a really good year. I also said Missouri. They finished 6-6. That was disappointing. And Minnesota had a pretty good year in the Big Ten as well. They were my sleeper there. But all in all, pretty bad. When two of my sleepers fire their coaches, obviously they were not sleepers after all. So I was wrong to think some of those teams would have surprisingly good years this year. Instead, they had such bad years, they had to fire their coaches. So I'm sorry to those guys for providing my kiss of death.
Where Luke was right.
Billy Napier, as an SEC coach, I thought the Gamecocks should have hired him a year ago. We'll see if it works out. But Florida agreed this guy is good enough for the SEC. And I think Florida is a bigger job than South Carolina. And Florida was in on him the first time they met with him. They didn't interview anybody else. He was the one guy they talked to. They liked him so much, they said, yep, he's our guy. May not be a good sign moving forward. You should do an extensive search. But they liked him so much, they realized he can work at Florida. And I think he can. I'm not telling you he's going to. I think he can. And I think he also would have been a good option for South Carolina. Now we'll get to see him up close and personal compared to South Carolina to see if the Gamecocks missed out on somebody or if they got the right guy themselves. But Billy Napier at Florida, I thought he would be a guy that would work in that conference. We'll now get to see firsthand if he can work in that conference.
Where Luke was right.
Cam Newton. How are Panther fans feeling about Cam Newton? People always call me a Cam Newton hater. Anytime you speak honestly, but it's something negative or it's something that people don't disagree with, you're labeled a hater. No, maybe you're just saying the truth. Cam Newton got benched again on Sunday. I think that was the fifth time he's been benched in the last three seasons. He had the worst completion percentage for any quarterback Sunday since Joey Harrington in 2004. He started the game 2 of 10 with two interceptions. I mean, it was terrible. It was bad. He had no business being on that field or any NFL field. Now, maybe he'll get better because these are only his first couple of weeks with this new team. I remember watching Josh Freeman in his first week with the Vikings embarrass himself 9 years ago on Monday Night Football. Maybe Cam will get better than Sunday. You can't get much worse. But come on. There's a reason why nobody signed him last year until the Patriots did in the final minute. There's a reason why he was sitting at home for the last 2 months until the Panthers were desperate enough to bring him in. He's just not an NFL quarterback anymore. He had a good career. Unfortunately, he's on the back end of that career, and he doesn't have the pieces anymore to put it all together. He doesn't have the speed, the athleticism, and he certainly doesn't have the arm to try to make enough plays to be a winning starting quarterback in the NFL.
Where Luke was wrong.
Couple last ones real quick. Maybe I was wrong on Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, and we'll get more into this coming up. It's unfair to truly grade them because they haven't had a quarterback, but that is part of the job. You can't live off of that excuse forever, and they've underachieved for 2 years. I really like this pairing when the Panthers brought them in. But already there was an article written in The Athletic this week talking about, you know, some pressure on Matt Rhule for the first time, that maybe it isn't working. Maybe this plan is not a good one. So for the first time, the tide's starting to turn where you're no longer being patient, and now you're talking about, well, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe this was a bad idea. So maybe I was wrong. I really like that hiring. I think it's too early to dump them just yet, but the tide is definitely turning that we're getting to a point where no longer can you be patient. You have to start to see something. Can these guys start to show us something there in Carolina, show us what they're building towards? It has not been great so far, a year and a half in at Carolina.
Where Luke was right.
Kyle Pitts. I said don't expect some sort of Hall of Fame career immediately. He's had two big weeks this year. They were back-to-back. Otherwise, take away those two games. And that's a big if, right? Remove those two games. But if you do, in the rest of his games, the other nine games, he's averaging three catches per game for 34 yards, zero total touchdowns in those nine games. Tight ends do not pop quickly. You have to do multiple things. You have to be able to block. You have to know the playbook from both a running play and passing play perspective. Yes, then you have to learn your routes. Then you have to catch. You got to do this and that. Plus the transition from college to the NFL. There's a lot involved in a tight end. It's not a wide receiver that just has to catch the ball and know his part of the play. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Then I'm going to turn around, try to catch the football. Now you got to know a little bit more as a tight end. Go back and look at all the great tight ends. They all got off to slow starts. Kyle Pitts will be fine, but if you were expecting him to have some sort of big year to replace Julio Jones this year, he had two really big back-to-back, and you were thinking, wow, this guy's really good, and he will be. But outside of those two games, he's averaging three catches a game, 34 yards, zero touchdowns. He has not had the immediate impact that I think a lot of people thought. He will, but for tight ends, it takes a couple of years to reach that level first.
Where Luke was wrong.
Last one, my picks. I went 4-6 in picks on Friday, 2-4 in college football, 2-2 in the NFL. We had a losing week. I'm still 55% of the year, 13 games over 500. We'll try to do better this Friday. But my picks last week, they were losers. We had a losing week, down week, bad. We'll try to bounce back this week. And there you go. Where I've been right, where I've been wrong. I said I was going to try to get through that quicker because I'm usually long-winded, and I did not do that. I did not get through that any quicker than usual. In fact, it took probably longer than ever. But those are the many things I've been right and wrong about over the past week. Come back and talk about Matt Rhule and the Panthers. As I said, is the tide starting to turn? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Suddenly I heard a strange noise down below. So in my flannel pajamas, I went tippy-toe. I could see or say Nick from the spot where I stood, so I slid down the banister just as fast as I could. All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. My two front teeth. See my
it is the Morrow Midday Show on with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Who is this? What version is this?
Spike Jones. All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. It's a classic.
Yeah. I think this is part of the reason when people complain about hearing holiday music all month or prior to Thanksgiving. I think it's because of songs like this one. You better get used to it, though. It's only December 1st, and we're off and rolling with the holiday cheer around here. So you get four more weeks of classics like this one as we get ready for the Christmas holiday. On the text line, somebody asked if Georgia loses, are they still in the playoff? Yeah, they're still in. I think Georgia's already in. The question becomes Alabama, right? You got to win to get in. You lose. I don't think you put a two-loss Alabama in. But then it depends what else happens. Just hypothetically speaking, say everybody else loses, right? Say Cincinnati loses, and then Oklahoma State loses their conference title, and then Michigan loses, and Alabama loses. Then you got a bunch of two-loss teams you could try to pick from. But otherwise, for Alabama, this is really an elimination game. Georgia, I think you're in regardless. The difference for Georgia is if you win this game, you stay at number one, and then you could face like a Cincinnati in that first round. That's obviously the easier path. If you lose this game, then quite frankly, what did you accomplish this year? You had a great year, but you didn't go undefeated. You didn't win the conference championship. You didn't beat Alabama in this hypothetical, and you have to go play the tougher of the first semifinal games. So for Georgia, there's still a lot riding on the line. Like, they've had a great year, and so we've just been coasting. We've had this whole thing in cruise control, but this is still a big game for Georgia to go out there and win. They'll be in the playoff even with a loss, but things change just mentally and then also their path to a national championship if they lose this game this weekend. But, yeah, I would imagine, right? Georgia, you lose. They're in. They've already secured their spot. Alabama's the team that's playing for their playoff life this weekend. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Sam, is Sam still there? Sam,
yes,
what's going on? How are you?
What's How's up, it going, Luke?
Good.
Hey, may I ask you a big favor?
Oh, boy. It depends how big. What do you got?
No, not so big, but I have a two-part question for you.
Sure.
So, I was at the basketball practice today at CFC.
Yeah.
They won over Tulane, if you heard.
Yes, I listened to the game last night. Were you there last night? That was a crazy game.
I gotta tell you, Tulane's really. I gotta tell you, Tulane's hard to beat. I gotta tell you, they're pretty tough.
Yeah, it seemed like it last night. The College of Charleston almost blew a 12-point lead.
Well, here's the second question to ask you.
Yes.
So I was watching a film on basketball last night.
Yeah.
And I want to make a point of view, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
I was very, very happy we won that game last night. Mm-hmm. And I just let you know that our team is going to Furman up in Greenville, correct?
Yeah. They play Furman on Friday, I believe.
So here's the thing: if the CFC team goes to Furman to win a W, which would that be?
What's College of Charleston's record? Are they 5-2 right now?
Yeah.
So if we get, I think so, right? So that would be 6.
I think
that
means 6-2. I'm reaching my 176 wins.
Wow. How about that?
We can make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
But thanks for putting me on. Hope you have a great have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes. It was a good. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I'm stuffed.
You're still stuffed. You're still a stuffed turkey. A week later, you're still full.
Well, I've been eating not so healthy foods like mac and cheese, turkey, gravy, all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
But thanks for putting me on. Hope you have a great day. And I'm here to finish your show.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, Sam. I appreciate you calling in. Always good to hear from you. I'm a huge fan of you. Appreciate it, Sam.
Hey.
Good to hear from you.
I love you, brother.
Hey, right back at you. Appreciate it. For College of Charleston, I listened to that game last night. So real quick, take you behind the velvet rope here. We got in yesterday, right? No show yesterday. Traveled with the team here to Asheville. If you're just joining us, I've been doing the show here from Asheville. I know it's radio. You wouldn't know unless I always tell you. But yesterday, I got my work done. We got here at 5. I did all my prep for the game yesterday. I'm done at 8. And you're in a hotel room, right? When you're at home, you got things to do. I'm in a hotel without a car or anything. 8 o'clock, I got nothing to do. So I was locked in last night. I was listening. I had multiple games going. I was watching Syracuse. It was a great setup I had going here. I had Syracuse, Indiana on the TV. That was a crazy game. And then I watched Clemson, Rutgers. I was listening to UConn, Furman, and College of Charleston broadcasts. I was balancing all three. And they were all staggered games, so it helped. I got to hear the end of all of them. But I was listening to Everett on the College of Charleston broadcast last night. My goodness, they were up 12 with 2:18 to go, the College of Charleston was. And then Tulane went on an 11-0 run. It was a one-point game in the final minute. And Tulane had a chance, if they could make some shots, they had a chance to actually take the lead in that final minute. But you're up 12 at home, 2:18 left. You start clearing the bench. You start celebrating. You know, you start lighting the cigar if you're, on the Celtics bench years ago. You start enjoying that. Up 12, 2:18 left at home. And that would have been a nice win. I mean, it was a good win, but you win by double digits, and you cruise to that victory against Tulane, you feel even better. So long story short, comes down to a one-point game. College of Charleston did not make a shot for the last 3:15. They let Tulane come right back in it. Tulane had a chance. They miss a shot. College of Charleston goes to the free throw line. They miss both foul shots to try to put the game away. Eventually, they made some foul shots with about, I think it was like 2 seconds left. Well, before that, they made some foul shots with like 6 seconds, you know, whatever. They made their foul shots in the final 10 seconds, ended up winning by 4 last night. But, man, it was a close call after they're up by 12. And you had one of those scenarios where it's a three-point game. Do you intentionally foul or let them play it out? I've always been a fan of, when you're on defense and you're up by 3, just play it out and see if they can make it. That's a low percentage shot. Now, I know the percentages are probably even lower, that you make the first foul shot, miss the second, get the rebound, and get a basket. That's a lot more that needs to happen. But things get dicey. You foul a guy while they're shooting by accident, or if they do miss the second free throw and get the rebound, now you have a chance to lose on a potential and one or a three-pointer, whereas if they just made the 3, the worst you could do was go to overtime. There's a whole lot that goes into that. I'm one of those. I just like to play it out. But in that Syracuse game last night, Syracuse, Indiana, Syracuse decided to intentionally foul when they were up 3, and it played out perfectly for Indiana. They made the first foul shot. They missed the second one, got the rebound, got fouled in the putback, made both of those foul shots, and it went to overtime. And eventually Syracuse won in double overtime. But that was one of those cases where the strategy backfired on Boeheim of doing that intentionally foul when you're up 3 and send them to the foul line instead of shooting a 3. It probably works more often than it doesn't. I'm just not a fan of it. Call me stubborn. The analytics probably tell me I'm, you know, in the minority, that it is the smart play. I just don't like doing that. Let them try to make a 3 at the buzzer to send us, worst-case scenario, to overtime. You can't lose the game that way. Whereas you extend it, sending them to the foul line, they get a rebound, they get a tip out, hit a three. Who knows what happens? You're giving them more chances to beat you. I just don't like it. So anyways, I was all into it. I was listening to Furman. They won in double overtime against High Point. College of Charleston won in the final seconds. Syracuse, Indiana went to double overtime. It was a wild night in college hoops. We'll see what happens tonight with the Citadel and UNC Asheville. Coverage beginning at 6 o'clock over on the city with yours truly. When we come back, I teased it. I'll get to it when we return. Matt Rhule and the other NFL coaches. Which ones are kind of on the hot seat here to finish up this season? I'll get to those next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Ooh, don't you think it's a pretty good plan? All I want for Christmas is a real good tan. All I want for Christmas is a real good tan. Take me to the islands, put my feet in the sand. Rocking to and fro with the rhythm of the ocean. Singing silent night with the palm trees a-blowing.
It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Which NFL coaches have the most pressure here coming down the stretch of this season? I'll give you my list in just a moment. Yeah, who doesn't just want a tan for Christmas? You know, you got people that always go to the like a tropical place around Christmas. I guess, you know, in the South you could get a nice little, at least like some sort of glossy base this time of year still in certain parts. I know in Georgia it was like 75 and beautiful. It's still cold in these Carolinas. It's like Christmas with the cranks. Get a nice tan. Go on a cruise instead of actually celebrating Christmas. That's one of the better holiday movies that certainly will be on all the time this time of year. Here's what's interesting to me, and I've been touching on this a little bit with Matt Rhule with the Carolina Panthers, because it seems like the tide has turned on him in recent weeks, where you go from, okay, you know, still being hopeful, optimistic, we're ready for the, it's about the future, not right now. But at this point now, we're a year and a half in, the team has shown some growth this year, but certainly not the quarterback position, which is most important. All things considered for the Panthers, if they could figure out a quarterback, I think they'd be just fine. The defense has been better this year. If Christian McCaffrey could stay healthy, that's quite the weapon. You have some weapons on offense elsewhere. The big thing has just been the quarterback. You've had four different starting quarterbacks for a role in a year and a half. None of them have been good enough. But for the first time, I started to read articles in a negative sense about Rhule and the job he's doing in Carolina, where prior to this, it has been all about, you know, having patience. In fact, in the text line, somebody asked about Matt Rhule and his job security. How quickly does he need to turn it around? The exact question was, how many years should Matt Rhule get with the Panthers to win? Which is a good question. I mean, I thought originally I would have told you year three, next year's got to be the big year where you're winning maybe up to 10 games and making the playoffs. I don't know if that's the case, going to be the case now. You're going to have back-to-back losing seasons most likely to start his tenure. But I was already thinking about this outside of Matt Rhule. On average in the NFL, about 7 coaches get fired per year. Now, the Raiders obviously have already made a coaching change, so that's one. But then who else? Because when you look around the league, I don't know if there are a ton of obvious candidates right now. Right now, all the teams are bottled up with one another. A lot of teams are still in it, so it's hard to determine. In fact, everybody except the Lions in the NFC are still alive in the playoff picture. I mean, even the Giants, they're 2 games out of a playoff spot, or after winning on Sunday, I think they're only 1 game out of the playoffs. The last place Giants, who are 4-7, everybody is still in it because of the extra playoff teams. And for certain teams, it's hard to fire a coach after you make the playoffs or you're in a playoff race, even if it means you only won, you know, 8 or 9 games. But I was thinking about this, and I've said this before. I said it a couple of weeks ago. I think Pete Carroll's gone after this year. I said it even before this current 3-game losing streak. I feel more confident about it now. I think Pete Carroll's out at Seattle by year's end. So he would be number 2. You have the Raiders and the Seahawks. I think 2 teams that will be making a coaching change. We've already had rumors about Chicago. So unless the Bears really go on a run here, Chicago seems like a pretty safe bet. That's 3 teams. Okay, now you still need to come up with, you know, 4 others that would be making a coaching change, or at least 3 others that will be making a coaching change.
Denver, they're 6-5 right now. They're right there in the playoff hunt. If they start to falter, they miss the playoffs, only win 8 games, maybe a move on from Vic Fangio. The Minnesota Vikings, I think if they miss the playoffs, you're probably moving on from Mike Zimmer. If they make the playoffs, is that enough to keep him around? It's hard to fire a coach after making the playoffs, but in Minnesota, they've been, over the last couple of seasons, you know, that's kind of been their ceiling. That's been best-case scenario. Make the playoffs, maybe you win a game, but since 2018, which wasn't that long ago, but in football it is. It is quite some time, right? They haven't been competing, truly, for a Super Bowl the last couple of years. So those may be some options. That would put us at 5 teams. And that's assuming Denver and Minnesota, right, they falter the rest of the way. As of today, I think their jobs are safe, those coaches, at least Denver more so than Minnesota. So that would put us at 5. Then maybe Miami, if they hadn't just won 4 straight. Maybe the Giants, but it's only year 2 of Joe Judge. There's always a surprise mixed in there. More thoughts on this as we wrap up your Wednesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Christmas was made for the cheering.
Fun, a funky finish to your Wednesday afternoon as we begin December and the holiday spirit around here on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. I was getting into this briefly before we had to hit that last commercial break, but before we go, real quick, as I was saying, NFL teams, we usually get about 7 coaching changes a year. The Raiders are the only one that's made a change so far. If I had to give you my list, I would say Las Vegas, Seattle, Chicago, Denver, Minnesota, that's only 5. Maybe a Miami, maybe a Giants. If it wasn't Mike Tomlin, I would say maybe Pittsburgh. This could be a quieter year for NFL coaching changes, which has been the opposite of college football this week. But there's always some surprises in there. And things can still change pretty quickly here over the last few weeks in the NFL season. I'm sure there'll be some surprises in the NFL this year as well. The Citadel and UNC Asheville tonight. Coverage begins at 6 on our sister station, The City. Then we'll be back here at noon tomorrow. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.